Hello and welcome to Juno Afternoon on your very own KTOO station, coming at you from the capital city live. We've got a great show. A Holocaust survivor is coming to town to have a talk at the Juno Christian Center. A representative will be here and we'll be chatting with Mr. Roth, the Holocaust survivor, on the phone. And then we'll hear about Saturday's recovery art exhibit at the Nugget Mall, a 17,500-mile bike race, get a preview of the Zahaskis musical presentation that we just heard about, and end with Arts Up. All that and more. Stay tuned.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. A preliminary hearing has been set for a Saskatchewan farmer accused of killing a 22-year-old First Nations man in August. As Dan Karpinchuk reports, the shooting sparked outrage among many Native people across Western Canada.
Colton Bushy of the Red Pheasant First Nation was killed in early August. He and several other young men from the reserve had driven their vehicle onto a farm near Bigger, Saskatchewan. They were looking for help because of a flat tire. But the property owner, Gerald Stanley, shot and killed Bushy during a confrontation. Stanley has pleaded not guilty to second-degree murder and is free on bail. Recently, a candlelight vigil had been held in memory of Bushy. There were also traditional ceremonies and prayers. But the scene in the days and weeks following Bushy's killing and of Stanley being freed on bail was one of anger and allegations of racism. Kim Jonathan is the vice chief of the Federation of Sovereign Indigenous Nations.
Again, this isn't the result we wanted, but I am calling for calmness and peace in the face of what feels like injustice.
Even the Premier of Saskatchewan, Brad Wall, weighed in, also calling for cooler heads to prevail. He acknowledged that racism is not unique to Saskatchewan, but he also condemned social media posts that were racist and hate-filled. When Stanley was granted bail last month, more than 200 people rallied outside the courtroom calling for justice for Colton Bushy. Stanley's preliminary hearing is set for mid-January of next year. For National Native News, I'm Dan Karpinchuk.
Congress passed an act this week intended to spur tribal tourism and increase support for tribal art. Charles Michael Ray has more.
If you spend any time during the summer months at a place like Wounded Knee on Pine Ridge, there's a good chance you'll come across a busload of tourists, often from Europe, who stop at the site and make the climb up the hill to the cemetery. Wounded Knee is a popular destination for many who visit South Dakota. And the newly passed Native Act aims to help tribal communities capitalize on these types of visitors.
I think there's a lot of opportunities for Native tribes to advance tourism within their own tribal communities that haven't been taken advantage of in the past.
Jeremy Staub is with First Peoples Fund. The organization supports Native artists and culture bearers nationwide. Staub says the federal act provides more resources for tribal communities to develop their own culturally based economic development.
It can help to bring more people to tribal communities, again, helping to stimulate tribal economics through purchasing artwork and contributing to specifically staying at hotels, eating at restaurants, things like that.
South Dakota's U.S. Senators John Thune and Mike Grounds both co-sponsored the Native Act. I'm Charles Michael Ray in Rapid City, South Dakota.
A Lakota man opposing the Dakota Access Pipeline project in North Dakota was part of a recent renaming ceremony for a Black Hills Peak in South Dakota and sees a link between the two locations, Jim Kent reports.
Phil Little Thunder's ancestors were among those killed at the 1855 Bluewater Creek Massacre. It was U.S. Army troops led by General William S. Harney who attacked the Lakota at Bluewater Creek. And it was in Harney's honor that the highest peak east of the Rockies was formerly named. Little Thunder feels it was a traditional belief and prayer that helped bring about the name change. He knows that this same belief in prayer and traditions like the Chinupa, or sacred pipe, is present at the Sacred Stone Camp.
So those people up north in Cannonball, they know. They're all there in prayer, despite some of the newspaper or media things that they talk about. Maybe it's misquoted or something.
The best way to avoid such misinterpretations, adds Little Thunder, is for media representatives to stay at Sacred Stone Camp for a while to learn about the Lakota people, instead of showing up for a day and then going home. I'm Jim Kent.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
Mm-hmm.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation, and by the law firm of Sanosky, Chambers, Saxe, Miller & Munson, advocating Native American interests throughout the United States, with offices in New Mexico, California, Alaska, and Washington, D.C.
Support by the National Indian Education Association, the only national Native organization representing Native students, educators, families, communities, and tribes. You can become a member at niea.org.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
It is 6 minutes past the hour. It is September 15th. You're listening to KTOO, and this is your very own Juno Afternoon live coming at you from the capital city. Jeff Brown is at the board. He's the producer and engineer of the show. I'm Joan Partis, your Thursday host. And for the weather, yes, it's 100% precipitation for, I don't know, today, tonight, tomorrow. Showers lightly, mainly before 10 a.m. Cloudy with a high near 57. Right now, we're looking at high near 56, southeast winds around 30 miles per hour, and 100% precipitation until later on this evening. So here we are, September in southeast Alaska. September in southeast Alaska also brings a lot of different visitors to town. We're here to talk with senior pastor of the Juno Christian Center, Mike Rose. He's here, and he's here to talk about a very special event that's happening this Sunday, and we actually have the man who'll be coming to town on the phone as well, a Holocaust survivor. But first, let's welcome Senior Pastor Mike Rose, and let's talk a little bit about this event that's happening this Sunday at 6 o'clock at the Juno Christian Center.
Well, thank you very much for having us on today. And really, I've been inspired by a man named Irving Roth, who is a Holocaust survivor, author, and international speaker. And he's going to be talking about something that, of course, is very real to him, because he is a survivor of the Holocaust, and how in one of history's most horrific chapters, during the Jewish people's most dire hour of need, the silence of the Western world was deafening. And so he really has made it a real priority in his life to educate people and let them know about the Holocaust. And he really brings, having heard his testimony, he brings it in a way that you can imagine it. As a boy, 10 years old, he began to see these signs coming. Anyway, we're going to have this. It's going to be Sunday, September 18th. He's coming, 6 p.m. at Juno Christian Center, right across the street from Fred Meyer's. There's no entrance fee. A donation will be taken. But that's sort of the beginning of it, the upshot. And very excited to have him and to hear from him today.
That sounds great. Mr. Roth, are you on the line?
Yes, ma'am. Certainly am.
Oh, so
pleasure to be here.
Oh, that is great. So, Mr. Roth, you're coming to Juneau, Alaska. Where are you coming from? Where do you live right now?
I live outside of New York City.
Oh.
And I've lived there for many years.
Okay. And you do international speaking about your experience. Can we talk a little bit about, not necessarily your experience, that might be too big for right now, but maybe we'll touch a little bit about it, but how you became an international speaker?
About finishing my career as an engineer, I had to do something. And I felt that I'd been speaking about my experience in schools and churches over the last, I don't know, 30, 40 years. I felt that I need to get involved in it, because the ideas of anti-Semitism and hatred of the Jews and Israel, unfortunately, has not gone away, did not disappear with the end of the Holocaust. It's resurrected. And so I felt that I need to tell people about, how the Holocaust came to be, the methodology, and look and see where today's anti-Semitism is coming from, how it's being promoted and promulgated, and the relationship between then and now.
That sounds fascinating. I feel like we're so lucky that you're coming to Juneau. And you have this book, or at least one of your books, called Bondi's Brother, and it's written by you and perhaps your brother, Edward Roth?
No, Edward Roth, my son.
Oh, okay. Okay. We don't have, you know, Juneau Afternoon is kind of like a light, newsy kind of neighborhood chat. We don't have a lot of time, and what we're talking about is so big. So I have so many questions. I guess I'll just start with one. Pastor Rose said that you were 10 when, I don't know what happened, when the Holocaust happened. I'm not sure if that could be like a specific time. But are there any memories that you want to share right here, right now on the radio?
One of the things that I would like to, might be worthwhile and useful to talk about, the fact is that what actually took place in Europe between the two world wars, one of the things that happened was a transformation. A transformation where Jews have lived in Europe for over 10 centuries, maybe 18 centuries. And there was a positive slope, because by the end of the 19th century, Jews were by and large integrated into society to some extent. They became citizens of every country of Europe except for Romania. In fact, during World War I, my father was born in the 1890s, was in the Hungarian army, the Austro-Hungarian army, as part of the war against the Soviet Union, Russia, France, England, and so on. And so he was one of the people who fought in the trenches for Germany, for Austria, for Hungary. He was not just a but private, but he actually was an officer and began his career in the Hungarian army, the Austro-Hungarian army rather, as a second lieutenant. By the time the war was over, he was a decorated soldier. He was a major in the Austro-Hungarian army, a very important and respected person of those people who fought for Germany and for the Austro-Hungarian Empire during World War I. And how is it then possible that his comrades in arms, in a way, 25 years later, took his son from his home into a cattle car to Auschwitz? How did this transformation take place? How is it possible that ordinary, law-abiding, religious, church-going people, neighbors and friends, became murderers? How did that happen? How did this transformation take place? And that's really one piece that I want to talk about. Because today, similar things are happening with respect to the Jewish people and Israel in particular. The world is becoming more and more anti-Semitic by propaganda, by out-and-out untruth, lies. I want to talk about that because it's important for us to understand how these transformations take place and to view it and watch it as I see it evolving today.
If you're just joining us, that is Irving Roth talking on the phone. He is coming up this Sunday. He'll be speaking at the Juneau Christian Center at 6 p.m., and he is a Holocaust survivor, and he's written a book. He lives outside of New York City. He's coming up to Juneau, Alaska, and I think he does this quite often to talk about his experiences. When you were talking about your father and I guess the Nazis taking his son, where were you living at that time?
I was actually living in Hungary at the time I was taken, because we began my life in Czechoslovakia, but in 1943 we escaped from what was then Slovakia already to Hungary, because Hungary was the last country in Europe that deported its Jews to the death camps. So we managed to get across the border and hoped that Hungary, being in 1942 and 43, when all the Jews were in Europe were taken by the various Nazi regime and shipped to Auschwitz and Majdanek and all the other death camps, Hungary did not do that. the Hungarian population, the Jewish Hungarian population, was by and large at home, and the men were actually part of a slave labor force attached to the Hungarian army. And so the Jews was effectively safe in Hungary at that moment. But unfortunately, in the spring of 1944, the Nazis of Hungary, the Nyilas, which was a very strong Nazi group, together with the German Nazi party and the German government, decided that since most of Europe is free of Jews, or Judenrein, the only country that had a large Jewish population was Hungary. In fact, close to 500,000 Jews. And in order to make all of Europe free of Jews, they then proceeded in 53 days to take the all the Jews of Hungary, 437,000, from their homes to ghettos, to cattle cars, to Auschwitz. And 90% of them murdered upon arrival.
And how old were you?
I was 14 years old when I arrived in Auschwitz.
And on that statement, there are so many questions. How long were you in Auschwitz?
Auschwitz, I was from May of 1944 to January 18th of 1945. At that point, the Russian army was approaching, and as a result of that, the commanders of Auschwitz decided that we need to take those who are still alive and able to walk. They marched us on something which is referred to as a death march. And generally took about three days. And if you couldn't march, you were dead. Not simply by because you couldn't walk anymore, you were simply shot on the way. Even if you just slowed down, you were shot on the way. And those of us who managed to go through those 3 days were then put into open cattle cars, open box cars actually, and then shipped to various camps. I wound up together with my brother in a place called Buchenwald. And after a few months in Buchenwald, my brother was taken away, and I was alone. And eventually, the United States Army liberated Buchenwald on April 11th, 1945.
I have so many questions for you, and I'm so happy you're coming to Juneau. If you're just joining us, you're listening to Juneau Afternoon on KTLO. Pastor Rose is here in the studio with us, the Juneau Christian Center and the Christians United for Israel are hosting an event this Sunday at 6 o'clock where Mr. Roth, who was just talking, will be speaking. He's coming up from outside of New York City. Mr. Roth, we wish you safe travels. And after everything you've been through, I think a trip from New York to Alaska is nothing. And we look forward to you coming and thanking you so much for joining us on the radio today.
It's a pleasure. Thank you. And I'm looking forward to meeting you all.
Okay, great. Thank you. And thank you for coming in today.
Thank you very much, friends.
Have a wonderful day.
We're going to take a short break, and we're going to be right back.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Thursday. It's the 15th of September, 2016. It's the birthday of the best-selling novelist of all time, and that was Agatha Christie, born Devon, England, 1890. Her books have sold more than 2 billion copies in 103 languages. She was born to an upper-middle-class family, homeschooled by her mother till she was 16. Father died when she was young, which threw the family into financial straits. Christie worked as a nurse during World War I, began writing stories, mostly about spiritualism, the paranormal. Then in 1920, a novel called The Mysterious Affair at Stiles, which featured a Belgian detective named Hercule Poirot. The book was a hit. She was off and running her formula, fairly simple. Assemble 8 or 9 people in some place, a snowbound train, a girls' school, in a remote country house, add a murder, often by poison. In one novel, a child dies by bobbing for apples. In another, a character is electrocuted. Well, executing a chess move. She often employed red herrings, double bluffs. In one book, the killer turns out to be a dead man. In another, the killer is a child. And in another, it turns out that all 12 suspects have committed the crime together. In 1927, Agatha Christie created the character of Jane Marple, who appears in 12 novels, Nosy Old Woman and Amateur Detective. Agatha Christie, who for most of her life pumped out one novel per year, said, 3 months seems to me to be quite reasonable to finish a book if you can get right down to it. It was on this date in 1963, Sunday morning, a bomb went off in the 16th Street Baptist Church in Birmingham, Alabama, frequent meeting place for leaders of the civil rights movement. It killed 4 schoolgirls, Cynthia Wesley, Carol Robertson, Addie Mae Collins, Denise McNair. A member of the Ku Klux Klan named Chambliss was convicted of possessing dynamite without a permit, sentenced to $100 fine, 6 months jail time, found not guilty in the murders of the 4 girls. A later investigation revealed that the FBI, under the direction of J. Edgar Hoover, had suppressed key evidence against him. He was retried 1973, found guilty, sentenced to life in prison. Here's a poem for today by Clive James entitled Windows is Shutting Down. Windows is shutting down and grammar are on their last leg, so what am we to do? A letter of complaint go just so far, proving the only one in step are you. Better, perhaps, to simply let it go. A sentence have to be screwed pretty bad before they gets to where you doesn't knows the meaning what it must be meant to had. The meteor have hit, extinction spread, but evolution do not stop for that. A mutant languages rise from the dead, and all them rules is suddenly old hat. Too bad for we, us, what has had so long the best seat from the only game in town, but there it am, and whom can say it's wrong? Those are the break. Windows is shutting down. A poem, Windows is Shutting Down, by Clive James, from his collection Opal Sunset, published by W.W. Norton & Company, used by permission here in the Writer's Almanac. Supported by the Poetry Foundation, you can subscribe to the Poetry Magazine podcast and the Poetry Off the Shelf podcast in the iTunes Store or listen at poetryfoundation.org. And by Progressive Insurance, working to make progress for more than 75 years. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
It is 23 minutes past the hour. You're listening to Juno Afternoon on KTOO. Jeff's at the board. Jeff Brown, he is the producer and engineer of the show. I'm Joan Pardis, your Thursday host. In the studio right now, we have Erin Maloney from the Rainforest Recovery and Katie Bosler from Bartlett Regional Hospital. She's the community relations person there. And they're here to talk about the Recovery Art Exhibit and more. National Recovery Month. That's what September is. Mm-hmm. And they're here to talk about some specific events happening here, right here in Juneau. So welcome to the show, ladies.
Thank you.
Good to see you.
Oh, nice to see Katie. Let's start with the Recovery Art Exhibit at the Nugget Mall. So when we talk about recovery art, as opposed to all of us making up our own ideas about what that may or may not be, can we talk about that?
Yes, sure. So Recovery Month is focused on bringing awareness and motivation, encouragement to people that are struggling with mental health and substance use disorders. So with all of these events in mind, the art show that's happening on the 17th is really allowing just a safe opportunity to explore and to share the powerful recovery stories that each person has. It's also for each recovery month, there is a different theme each year. And so this year, it is Join the Voices, Our Families, Our Stories, Our Recovery. And so it also allows family members to share their stories as well. And so with submissions I've received submissions from family members, from individuals, from allies that are supporting the recovery movement. So this is a really great opportunity.
Yeah, that sounds wonderful. Sounds wonderful. And for me, just speaking for myself, people who have, you know, battled their demons and come out the other side seem to be the bravest and most courageous people that I could imagine. Mm. So it just seems like a very moving thing to talk about. It, you know, weaving it into the fabric of our families, our community, the mm-hmm. world. So, because it's one of those things that defines people, obviously.
Yeah, and oftentimes it can be hard to be able to reach out and to feel support. You know, there has been so much of a stigma and misconceptions about the recovery process. And so each year moving forward, we are only trying to push forward those barriers so people don't feel they have to be silenced. And so that's why I am really promoting Recovery Month this year. And not just my agency, but all the agencies in the community are really coming together. And we want to know and let other people know, I should say, that you're not alone. You are supported, and we are here, and let's talk about it, because in recovery, the support system is so, so important.
Okay. If you're just joining us, that's Erin Maloney speaking. Mm-hmm. She's from the Rainforest Recovery, and you're talking about support. So before we go any further, can you talk about if somebody's listening and they want to reach you, or they want to reach you on behalf of a family member or a loved one, how can they get a hold of you?
Yes. So at Rainforest, I'm the Access and Community Liaison Lead. So my phone number is 907-796-8414, and I would love to speak to any individual person, family, friend, colleague that has any questions about the recovery process and how to move forward. There are many resources available within the community, and I can help be a lifeline in that sense.
And, you know, Rainforest Recovery Center is located on the Bartlett Regional Hospital campus, so it's part of the hospital. And in addition to the art show on Saturday, there's also a really interesting film that's taking place. It's kind of back-to-back, actually, because mm-hmm. you have the art show from, 12:30 to 4:30 at the Nugget
yes.
Mall.
Yes, yes.
And then at 4:30, there's a film called The Hungry Heart, which looks at the prescription drug addiction mm-hmm. world through the eyes of a pediatrician from Vermont. And he is prescribing what's called Suboxone?
Suboxone.
Suboxone to help his patients struggling with this. It's kind of a controversial situation, and there's a lot of challenges with it, but it sounds like it really explores this doctor's journey dealing with addicts and the recovery process and with Suboxone. And after the film, or as part of the presentation, there will be the doctor on staff, the medical director for Rainforest Recovery. Her name is Jenna Highstand, and she will be part of a presentation around this film, along with another doctor who practices at Bartlett, Dr. Lindy Jones. So that's at 4:30 at the Gold Town. So
mm-hmm.
we've got things happen both sides of town that day.
And that's all on Saturday. Mm-hmm. And then there is a recovery film on Monday, and then something on Thursday, and mm-hmm. throughout the rest of the month. And I think you can find everything on Facebook. What's the name of the group on Facebook?
You know what? I think it is actually under the NCADS Facebook.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And, yeah, so for all these films as well, there will be a discussion as going along with it afterwards. So it's a great opportunity to bring up questions about anything.
Okay.
Yeah, there's a whole list of things that are happening. And if you are on Facebook and you just go to your search and go to Recovery Month in Juneau, it's not one word, just, you know, capitalized like the title there, Recovery Month in Juneau. And you can find posts on these various events. So, it's quite packed, isn't it, Erin? I mean, it's kind of back to back. And if you are a Bartlett employee, we just put out in the Bartlett Buzz, we have kind of a whole, which is our internal newsletter. There's a whole rundown on that. And I'm just kind of looking at that. Yeah, so let's see. I know there's a recovery tree at the hospital. At the library, Valley Library.
There is a recovery Tree of Hope at the Mendenhall Library, and this Saturday, the 17th, at 12 o'clock, and also on the 24th, from 12 to 1:30, there will be a rainforest counselor there helping individuals, families, trace their hands, write inspirational messages of hope, wisdom, and then to place that onto the tree. And it's actually really beautiful because since last week, this tree has already grown so much. And so I'm really excited about seeing it at the end of the month, how big it gets. It's a nice visualization to see that the Juneau community cares.
That sounds great. Mm-hmm. So once again, if you're just joining us or if you've been listening along, Erin Maloney and Katie Bosler here, both from Bartlett, different regions, different elements of Bartlett. Erin's with the Rainforest Recovery, and Katie's with the organization as a whole. And it is National Recovery Month. We are doing things here in Juneau. And if you need any more information, you could look at Facebook, or you could call Erin at Rainforest Recovery. I'm sure you could find everything you need on the web. And then Katie's to add one last thing.
Well, and just as far as things that are coming right up, because it's kind of back-to-back here, Monday night at the Goldtown PBS Frontline documentary, Chasing Heroin, will be shown. Mm-hmm. The film The Anonymous People is set for the 22nd of September at 6 o'clock at the UAS Egan Lecture Hall. And then there's still in the works, but planned is Recovery Walk and Feast for the 25th, and a training for recovery coaches for the 28th at Gruning Park Recreation Center. So, and there's a lot of groups that are involved here, right?
There really is. So there's been a planning committee that has been working on this for over a month before September has happened, and all the agencies in this community has come together, and it's nice to see that we're all working together on one common goal, and it is nice to see as well different agencies taking leads for these events. And so if you go out to these events, you'll see the workers for all of these agencies out and about.
That sounds great. Mm-hmm. Well, thank you both for what you do for our community, your service. And also, please come back and talk about what's going on at Bartlett and also about all the different services.
Yes, I would love to.
Recovery and how people could reach out, because you both do such an important service for the community. So thank you so much.
Thank you.
We're
going to
take
Joan.
A short break. We'll be right back.
It is 26 minutes to the hour on Thursday, September 15th. Right now, it is 56 degrees, and it is 100% precipitation in downtown Juneau. You're listening to Juneau Afternoon on KTOO. Our next guest is probably happy to be in out of the rain. His name is Ian Anderson, and he is taking a 17,500-mile bike ride. Is that correct?
That's correct.
And you started up north. Where exactly?
I started at Prudhoe Bay along the Arctic Ocean.
And you are going to?
Ushuaia, Argentina, which is at the bottom of South America.
So how does one do that?
Well, it takes a very long time, first of all. I planned for about 10 months. I'm kind of thinking now at this point it might take a little bit longer. Some are closer to 12 to 14.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, just one pedal stroke after another, through rain or shine.
All right. And why are you doing it?
Well, the cause I have chosen is spinal cord injury awareness. About 3 years ago now, in September of 2013, one of my best friends from college was in a really bad car accident. She was in a taxi in Las Vegas, and her and another friend of mine were struck by a big truck, a big drunk driver on the road, and she was actually paralyzed from her chest down.
I'm sorry to hear that.
Yeah, very tragic, very unpreventable. And so the ride is for her. She's kind of the inspiration behind it and the reason I'm doing this. And it's just, you know, been a great opportunity so far to talk to people like you, get the word out on spinal cord injury awareness and spinal cord disability awareness, and yeah.
Are you raising money?
I am. And so I have a GoFundMe, and the charity I'm working with is United Spinal Association. So they primarily help veterans injured overseas and then also, you know, Americans injured here in the States. Just a really awesome, awesome nonprofit, and all the money I'm raising is going directly to them. So the goal is $1 per mile. So it's a little bit over $1 per mile. About $20,000 is the goal. I think we're around like $7,500 right now. So making some good progress. Have another year to continue fundraising. But
okay. But you haven't gone 7,500 miles.
I have not gone there yet.
Okay.
No.
I have to ask. So give me a day in the life of somebody who is biking from the top of the world to the bottom. Or at the top of the Americas to the bottom. Let's not be completely xenophobic, let's just say. I don't even think that's the right word. But anyway, so what's a day in the life?
Sure. So
ethnocentric is the right word.
There you go. So usually wake up around 6 or 6:30, somewhere in there when the sun's coming up, to maximize the daylight hours. I typically sleep in a tent. I'm trying to camp as much as possible, you know, maybe do a hostel every 7 days or so to shower and, you know, do some laundry. But typically it's a tent, so I wake up around 6 or 6:30. I'm a big coffee guy. I love having coffee in the morning, but I usually don't have time to heat it up. So more often than not, it's just, you know, the instant mix into the water bottle, shake it up, screw the cap on, shake it up, drink it really fast, drink the cold coffee, get the energy. Have a little bit of breakfast after that. Some bananas and peanut butter is kind of my go-to. Two or three bananas. I think I've probably eaten like 50 bananas already. It's only been 3 weeks. Like three or four jars of peanut butter. Lunch, you know, I'll ride maybe 40 miles on average before I stop for lunch. Peanut butter and jelly sandwich, some beef jerky, maybe a couple protein bars, lots of seeds and nuts. I think I heard somewhere that you're burning 7,000 to 8,000 calories when you ride 80 miles a day with like a fully loaded, like lots of weight on the bike going up and down hills. So you're burning a ton of calories, and the idea is just to replenish those as much as you can. So protein, you can kind of just eat whatever you want, really.
And then it's another 40 miles.
Another 40 miles, around like 80 miles a day. Hopefully it'll be closer to 100 down to the lower 48, but... And then, you know, taking a day or two off each week to rest and sightsee and stuff like that.
Right. Yeah. So here you are in Juneau, so what happens next?
you can't really ride out of here.
Yeah, so I'm taking a little detour. I heard Southeast Alaska was just so beautiful, and it is. I mean, the weather's a little bit to be desired, but really nice area. So I'm doing the whole Maritime Highway thing.
Oh.
Came down from Haines mm-hmm. 2 days ago to Juneau, going to Petersburg tonight at 6:45, and then on to Prince Rupert. From there, the top of Vancouver Island, where I'll ride down Vancouver Island, which I've heard is also really beautiful. And then continuing down the west coast, pretty much all the way down into Baja, Mexico. Bottom of Baja, you have Cabo, where another ferry takes you across that little channel into mainland Mexico. And then from there, you link up with a road called the Panamericana, which is a highway system that takes you pretty much all the way down through Central and South America into Argentina. And then once you get to Ushuaia, there's like a little network of smaller roads that brings you to the southernmost point.
Okay.
Yeah.
So Ian Anderson, he's here talking with us. That's who's been talking about Day in the Life, because I asked. Somebody who's riding 17,500 miles, and he is riding for a cause, spinal cord injury awareness, and he's got a GoFundMe. I guess you could go look up Ian Anderson.
Yeah, so the best way to find me is through my website.
Uh-huh.
For the ride, it's www.ridewithian.com.
Okay.
That's the website.
And he's on a little bit of a vacation in Southeast Alaska because there's not a lot of riding to do, but he's, you know, maybe he's doing, you know, laps around the ferries as he goes.
Yeah, I'm pedaling in place.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you could say it. You've got ride coming up. So, well, as I say in Australia, good on ya, or New Zealand, wherever they say that. That's great.
Yeah.
And you're at the beginning, so you must be really excited.
Still at the beginning. It's been so great so far. I can already tell this is probably the best decision I've ever made so thus far with my life. Like, everyone is just so generous and kind that I meet on the road, on the highway.
And where do you call home right now?
I was living in San Francisco
uh-huh.
for about a year, working at a little architecture firm.
Mm-hmm.
And so I guess, you know, if things don't change, that's probably where I will return to after the ride. But originally from Minnesota.
Yeah, well, that's yet to be seen what will change in a ride like this. Well, thank you so much for coming in and sharing it with us. Ian Anderson, Ride with Ian. You could go to his website. You could go to his GoFundMe site, and it's all for spinal cord injury. So thanks for coming. We're going to take a short break, and we'll be right back with our next guest.
Thank you so much for having me.
This is Bird Note. A large, dark woodpecker clings to the side of a tree. Its face is almost clown-like, boldly patterned in black and cream with a red crown. And it's holding something in its bill. Eyeing the tree with care, the woodpecker wedges the object into a shallow hole. A closer look reveals thousands of these small pockets in the bark, most neatly set with acorns. We're watching an acorn woodpecker, a bird found in parts of the western U.S., and it chips out these little recesses to fit the acorns it'll harvest throughout the fall. A family of acorn woodpeckers may use this storage tree or granary for generations. Some of them hold as many as 50,000 acorns, which the woodpeckers rely on when insect prey and other foods are hard to come by. But if trees with thick bark are in short supply, utility poles, fence posts, or the sides of barns will serve the same purpose. So, does the acorn woodpecker just kick back and munch acorns all winter? Not a chance, because in the weeks after a fresh acorn is lodged in a hole, it dries and shrinks, meaning acorn woodpeckers spend much of the winter shuttling them from one hole to another, finding just the right fit. Today's show brought to you by the Bobolink Foundation. For Bird Note, I'm Mary McCann. Now is a great time to renew your season tickets for the Juno Symphony. Join conductor Troy Quinn as he and the orchestra explore exciting musical frontiers. Renewals are available now and will hold your seats until September 15th. After that, season tickets are available for everyone. You'll get tickets to our four main stage concerts and our symphony showcase. Contact the office at 586-4676 to enjoy live symphonic music at its finest. More information at junosymphony.org.
Support for this programming paid for by Kate Troll, area-wide candidate for City and Borough of Juneau Assembly in the October 4th municipal election. Paid for by Kate Troll for Assembly.
Hello, you're listening to Juno Afternoon. It's almost 15 minutes to the hour. We have two guests left. Can we do it? Yes, we can. We have Paul Zahasky here. He is part of, an important part, of the Alaska String Band. And he's here to talk about his Southeast Odyssey. What's going on with the band? What are you guys doing?
Well, we have a very exciting development. We created a film a number of years ago, I think it was 2 years ago now, called The Southeast Alaskan Odyssey, which is a takeoff on the live show that we do here and around the world, actually. We do it all summer long at the Mount Roberts Tram in their theater, and then we tour with it in the winter months. A couple of years ago, we made a movie version of it. The show talks about Juneau. It talks about some of the local history, the Treadwell Mine, the wreck of the Princess Sophia, Alaska living and history, that type of thing. And we knit it all together with music and stories, and we made a film of the live show that we do, and it's going across the country on public television in a couple of weeks. So we're thrilled.
Congratulations.
And it's on 360 North tonight, as a matter of fact, which we're very, very excited about.
That is great.
Yeah, we're stoked.
Okay, so I've been living under a rock. I didn't realize you're doing a live show at the Mount Roberts Tram. I understand what it is. It's
sure.
Like a little...
Yeah, it's called the Southeast Alaskan Odyssey. And what we did was we were playing locally as a family, you know, a bazillion years ago when our kids were little, around different venues in the summer for the tourists. That was kind of our bread and butter. And we kept getting these questions from people, you know, what is it like living here? What is the weather like? What do you do for fun? What do you do with wildlife? And what's the history? So we started taking a lot of those questions and developing basically a musical show, lacing music with history and monologues and native regalia. My wife sewed a bunch of cuspucks for us. And so we take people on a journey with that program. In the summer months, we do it at the Mount Roberts Tram in their theater. And we do just a 25-minute show. We have actually have four different components that we'll do so we can rotate through different pieces of it. And we do it all summer. In fact, this summer we've been cranking them out. We've been doing 7 and 8 shows per day, which has been a long, long day. So we'll do our show, and then they'll show their film in the theater called Seeing Daylight, which is a really good film about the native culture. So we hopscotch, and we'll do that all day. And then once tour season is over, we take that show and we travel with it. And we've been across the country, Australia, New Zealand, bit in Canada with it. So
that's great.
It's been a hoot.
That's
mm-hmm.
great. And now public television,
yeah.
A new frontier.
We are stoked.
That is
mm-hmm.
great. And it airs tonight.
Yes. 360 North, 8 p.m. And it's on for the next 3 days at different times.
Oh, cool.
On 360 North.
Excellent. And
yeah.
Can we see it on the web, too?
I don't know.
I'm going to find out from somebody at KTOO and mm-hmm. let everyone know.
Mm-hmm.
Jeff is saying yes.
That's
true. The definitive answer.
That is the answer.
Jeff says yes. That sounds great. Mm-hmm. Well, thank you for coming in.
Absolutely.
For taking the time.
Our
seven
pleasure.
Or eight shows. Five months a year.
Well, thanks for KTOO, too, because they stood behind it. They saw the show and have gotten behind it and are excited about it. And that means a lot to us. I mean, that's the best endorsement we could get anywhere.
Oh, my goodness. I am so excited to look at it tonight.
All right.
Okay, we're
going
to listen to some of the Alaska String Band, the Zahasky family. That
mm-hmm.
sounds great. And then we'll be right back with Arts Up. Thanks for
great.
Coming in.
My pleasure. Thank you.
That is the Elastic String Band. Check out their movie tonight, 360 North. It's going to be on for the next 3 days. Check it out. You can find it on the web. And they are going on a tour after they're done with tourist season up here. I didn't realize they were doing a show with the tram. That sounds great.
Yep, they've been doing that for a little while.
I know. I should have checked it out while I was up there. So here we are. We've got Nancy DeCherny here for the last guest of our show to talk about what's going on. It's our arts.
Well, we have a few things, just a few things. Let's see. This evening we could be tango dancing. We could be Cuban salsa dancing, as we can every Thursday night over at Rockwell. There's Peter and the Starcatcher. If you haven't seen it yet, I believe that tonight is the last night to get the special deal where if you call up and say Juno Arts, you get half price tickets.
That's pretty cool.
Ooh.
And the show closes this Sunday.
So you need to go see it because it's lots of fun. And let's see, there's open mic and karaoke and West Coast swing dancing. You can get the details to things at the JAHC.org website. Organ concert tomorrow at noon, of course. I haven't mentioned that one in a little while. There's a football, Thunder Mountain High School versus North Pole. 5 to 8 p.m. out at the Thunder Mountain High School football field. Perfect weather.
Tomorrow night or tonight?
Tomorrow night.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
We'll have the advantage. We'll have the weather advantage. Well, we're used to playing in, a monsoon.
Yes. Yes. Let's see. Evening at Egan. Can Alaska's government be run like a business? Talk with Clive Thomas out at the UAS Egan Library from 7 to 8. That's
can
great.
It?
Well, my experience has indicated probably not, but people like to try. And, as I was talking to Clive the other day, and he said, well, if people had figured this out, we would have figured it out a long time ago. But anyway, his perspectives can be heard out at Egan Library. It's going to be interesting. So let's see. We've got Saturday morning Pilates with Abby at the Yoga Path, and we've got silk painting for kids at the Canvas. Learn to skate with Tots and Youth over at the Treadwell Ice Arena at 11:45. There's a Juno High School cross-country invite from 1 to 2:30 at Savico Park. Again, a beautiful day, I'm sure. It's Capital Brewfest.
Capital Brewfest.
Capital Brewfest from 1 to 5 over at the Jack. Tickets are sold out except for the VIP tickets.
Saturday?
Mm-hmm. So if you want, you get tickets by going, Googling Capital Brewfest.
And if you're feeling important, you can get a VIP ticket.
Well, if you just want to go.
Right, exactly. Then you are important.
You're going to be a VIP, so there you have it. Let's see. We have a Hank Williams happy birthday thing happening Saturday at 8 p.m. over at the Red Dog Saloon. And I didn't happen to check who all's playing, but everybody loves Hank Williams.
That's
so
really interesting.
Yeah.
It's a good setting.
Yeah. And Sunday we have some advocacy training at 9:30. Sunday at the Aware Shelter. Is that the little secret thing about the Hank Williams things? There we are. Happy birthday. Donkey Cart, Riley Woodford, Sammy Burrows, and Dan Kirkwood at the Red Dog. 8 p.m. and it's free.
Yay.
Yeah.
Have a birthday,
okay.
Hank.
Yes, good. Happy birthday, Hank, on Saturday night. We have Juno Cabaret on Sunday. They're at the Rockwell Ballroom, 7 to 9 p.m. They always do a wonderful job and have a great selection of people performing. So that is something to check. If you haven't tried that one yet, you should check that one out sometime. It's a nice thing at the Rockwell Ballroom. On Monday, your makerspace is open. Feeling like you want to do a little buzz sawing or using the 3D printer or something like that, just go on out there and find out about that thing. It's a really nice resource in the community. It's out on Anka Street, and it's open from 6 to 8 p.m. for the public. So you can go out and learn more about it and then become a member and use it anytime you want to. on Tuesday, I think we might be having a round table at the Arts Council from 5 to 6:30 p.m. There's beginning drawing with Avril Valise at the Canvas at 6 p.m. 7 p.m., Proxima Centauri, they're going to do a talk about that at the Marie Drake Planetarium. That is the closest star to us, and scientists believe that there is another planet like Earth that is orbiting that particular star. So they're going to have a little chat about that. And then because we can never see the stars here, you get to see the stars. They have a thing that shows you what the stars are going on. Museums Alaska is having the Alaska Historical Society Annual Conference starting on September 21st over at the Alaska State Museum. And there's some upstairs Inferno at the Goldtown Nickelodeon. There's a weekly old-time music jam at the Alaskan Hotel, and Connecting with the Spirit of the Land at Northern Light Church from 7 to 9:30. So check those things out. If you're thinking about going to Matas Yahoo, the tickets are officially sold out, but I know that what that really means is there'll be a wait list at the door, and I've never turned anyone away, ultimately. So you just don't have your ticket in hand, but come to the door at 6:30, get on the wait list. It's going to be a fabulous concert. So that's about all I got for you.
Okay. So she's been practicing, is the next.
It's the start of our season.
Exactly.
And we are doing that in collaboration with KTOO. He is a big name, and we can't do it by ourselves. So we are doing it with KTOO.
Well, Grammy nominated or something?
All sorts of things.
Uh-huh. You know. So what's the next big show coming down?
We start our season, and the season brochures probably got into your mailbox, or maybe you got three or four of them because we screwed up our mailing list, in which case hand those out and give them to your friends, is Women of the World. They are on October 24th. A cappella group for women. They sing in 29 different languages, and they bring songs, stories, and dance from all over the world. And it's going to be a really wonderful show out at Thunder Mountain.
Sing in 29
different languages. I have trouble with English.
Yes. Wow, that's impressive. That's great.
Yeah, it's going to be quite the thing. So do check that one out and get your season tickets. Season ticket holders have all sorts of little benefits, like you get to come to a special pre-party to buy your wearable art tickets, and you get 20% off on your tickets if you're a member and stuff like that. So there's some advantages, and plus you're supporting the arts. We like that.
That's a good thing. And then, that sounds great. That sounds wonderful. So thank you for braving the...
Yes, I'm going to swim back across.
Yes, hurricane-type weather. So it looks very grim. Everyone be very careful out there.
Yep.
We're going to wrap up the show. It is 4 minutes to the hour, and we are looking at rain. Southeast winds around 30 miles per hour. We southeastern Alaskans laugh at such winds. Anyway, tomorrow rain as well. Tonight, it could be heavy at times. Could you imagine that? It's low around 53. New precipitation amounts between 1/2 and 3/4 of an inch possible. Tomorrow showers likely, mainly before 10 a.m. And then cloudy with a high near 57. Chance of precipitation is only 60% tomorrow. Tomorrow night, showers likely and cloudy with a low around 49. Saturday is showers, high near 54, and then we're looking at showers for as long as I could see, but it does look like mostly sunny on Tuesday. Tomorrow, listen in. Andy Klein will be here. He'll be talking about Sunday's cabaret with guests Heather Mitchell and Tom Loker. He'll also be talking about Andrew Nagorski. He's coming up with the Juno World Affairs Council. It's a presentation on the Nazi hunters. He wrote that book, Andrew Nagorski. Brian Fraley from the Canvas will be here with an update on activities there, and Bill Merck will be here to highlight Friday's poetry open mic. That's with Andy Klein, always a party. Thanks for joining us. You're listening to KTOO. This is Juno Afternoon.